Pop-Up Theatre presents Dead in the Wake of JFK, a Sherlock Holmes review, hosted by Alexandria Tam.
Welcome, Pop-Up Theatre listeners, as we continue to follow on from our Sherlock Holmes audio play series of factual fiction crimes. The topic today is the JFK assassination and its surrounding conspiracy theories. This is a follow-up from our Sherlock Holmes in the Umbrella Man episode. Today, I'll be talking to author Steve Cameron, who has written two books on the subject. His first book, The Deputy Interviews, focuses on the late Deputy Sheriff Roger D. Craig. Now, Sheriff Craig was both an investigator and witness on that infamous day on November 22, 1963, when President John F. Kennedy was shot and killed. Steve, welcome to the show.
Hello, Alex. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all ours. So first of all, I wanted to ask if you heard our Sherlock Holmes in the Umbrella Man episode.
Absolutely. Yeah, I listened to it and I enjoyed it very much. And I saw your name in the credits and you were the part of the babushka lady. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I was.
You did a fantastic job. Great accent. I have a little side story for you if it's okay, I can share it with you and your audience.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So Beverly Oliver is the real babushka lady. And I had the honor of meeting her about a year and a half ago at one of the JFK conferences that I was speaking at in Dallas. And she's a wonderful woman. She was a dancer at one of Jack Ruby's clubs, the Carousel Club in Dallas.
Oh, really?
But what you guys did with that episode, it wasn't only entertaining, but there were a lot of facts in it. And, you know, I think that for anybody to be able to tie in Sherlock Holmes to the JFK assassination, you deserve a major award.
Thanks very much. Yeah, we definitely enjoy making it. So just going back to the episode for a little bit, do you think there is anything in there that could actually be truthful?
Well, the fact that they were able to identify Lee Harvey Oswald as the assassin, within a half an hour, I believe his name started popping up. And the tie-ins with J. Edgar Hoover and the oil men in Texas at the time, there were many people, and including in your episode, that had a motive. Oswald worked in that building, so his prints would have been on boxes. So it really isn't evidence for Oswald being the shooter.
Right. And I guess this question gets asked quite frequently, but what about the grassy knoll? The one thing that I feel like really sticks is the fact that his head goes back and left, not front and down. Was there a grassy knoll shooter? Was there a bullet that came from the front?
Yes, absolutely. I believe that there were at least four snipers involved at four separate locations. One of the kill shots did come from the grassy knoll, and there is plenty of documentation that supports that, including witnesses that heard the shots come from there.
So what about the tie-in with CIA agent E. Howard Hunt, who many people say was the tramp who was arrested on the grassy knoll and maybe have been the grassy knoll shooter? What's your opinion on that?
The story about the tramps, you know, there's some similarities. I don't know 100%. Honestly, I can't say whether or not that's E. Howard Hunt is, you know, one of the tramps. I do know that E. Howard Hunt, he was involved in Watergate. And one of the plumbers that was used in Watergate is a guy by the name of Bernard Barker. They identified Bernard Barker as one of the men that was on the grassy knoll, and he was pulling out a badge saying he was Secret Service to witnesses and saying everything is under control. And he worked directly with Howard Hunt.
Wow, okay.
I recently just found out that Howard Hughes's bodyguard is named in an FBI file and using the name Lee Harvey Oswald, and this is in 1961, 1962, to buy Econoline vans from a Ford dealer in New Orleans. And so that's another connection that I just found out recently.
Yeah, wow. It's amazing that you're still finding out new things surrounding this case. Now, the story goes that lone gunman Lee Harvey Oswald was positioned in the school book depository building and he shot President Kennedy from there. He was accused as the assassin of JFK, but he himself was fatally shot 2 days later by gangster nightclub owner Jack Ruby while being transferred from the Dallas County Jail. So that's the official story put forward by the Warren Commission that led the investigation. But what's the alternative story from Deputy Sheriff Craig?
Yeah. So Roger Craig worked for the sheriff's office, and the president's limo passed right by the sheriff's office. The limousine passed them by. They made that left turn on Elm Street, and then shots rang out. Roger Craig saw a motorcycle officer ride his motorcycle up to the picket fence that was up near the grassy knoll, and he went behind the fence. Roger Craig followed him. He saw a woman, and she was attempting to leave the parking lot. And Roger Craig immediately jumped in front of her car and told her to stop. And she said, no, I can't. I have to go. I have to go. And he said, no, you're under arrest. Another officer, his name was Lummy Lewis, he came up to Deputy Craig and he said, I'll take it from here. And so Roger Craig then proceeded over to the picket fence where dozens of witnesses had gathered because they had all heard shots coming from the picket fence atop the grassy knoll. And then Roger Craig noticed one of his other deputies that he worked with said, what do you got? There was a bullet in the grass, and it was in the middle of blood and brain matter from when the president was shot. And at that point, a man came into the scene, identifying himself as FBI. He walked over to the bullet, bent over, picked it up, put it in his pocket, and he walked away. Now, this was captured in photographs.
Yeah, Steve, this is all fascinating stuff, but I don't want to go over time with you. Did Roger Craig actually go to the crime scene where Lee Harvey Oswald was? Did he go up to the school book depository?
So Roger Craig then proceeded to the sixth floor of the school book depository. He walks over to the window, and immediately he sees three shell casings lined up side by side, no more than an inch apart, all facing the same direction. Now, if you look at the crime scene photos, that is not what the crime scene photos depict. The shells are scattered. So there was some staging of that sniper's nest.
Right. So what about the rifle Oswald was using? There's much debate about whether he could have gotten off three shots in 6 seconds using that type of rifle.
Now, the rifle that was initially found was not an Italian Mannlicher Carcano. That's the weapon that the Warren Commission says that Lee Harvey Oswald used to shoot President Kennedy.
Right.
Captain Will Fritz for the Dallas Homicide Division of the Dallas Police Department was on scene. And then he says, does anybody know what kind of gun it is? And then another officer came over and he looked at it and he said, yeah, it's a Mauser. And he held it up and he saw stamped right on the barrel 7.65 Mauser that eventually morphed into a .65 Italian Mannlicher Carcano. I also show this in my book. If you've ever seen the famous backyard photos of Lee Harvey Oswald holding up a rifle, it's not the same weapon that is seen being escorted from the school book depository. That rifle had built-in side sling mounts on it. Now, in the photographs of Oswald in his backyard holding up that rifle had built-in bottom sling mounts, and you can see it in the photographs.
Right. Wow. So now, Sheriff Craig obviously plays a real significant part in this web of conspiracy, but his version of events contradicted the Warren Commission's findings, and that's when the trouble started. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Yes. Roger Craig's testimony was very dangerous to the official narrative of the JFK assassination. And when he went to his superiors with his information, they didn't want to hear what he had to say. He was told by Sheriff Decker to keep his mouth shut. But Roger Craig wasn't that type of person.
Right. Okay, so continuing on his story, at the time, a former Dallas deputy sheriff was found dead in his father's home with a gunshot wound to his chest on May 15, 1975. Now, the police investigation ruled this off as a self-inflicted wound, so basically saying he committed suicide. Do you believe this, and if not, why was he killed?
Because he would not stop talking about the case. Anybody that approached him about it, reporters, people that were writing books, he would tell them what he knew. And then while he was living at his father's house outside of Dallas, his father walked into the house and found Roger Craig in his bedroom laying in the middle of the floor. And the gun was lying long ways on the bed. The bullet wound was actually at the very top right part of his chest or his collarbone, and it was on a downward angle, and it traveled down and exited out of his lower back.
Oh, wow.
So it's very suspicious the way that he died. He was not suicidal.
Right.
And many people, after the assassination, they died very mysteriously. On your podcast, the Sherlock Holmes, when Sherlock Holmes was investigating the case, if that would have really happened, Sherlock Holmes would have probably ended up like Roger Craig.
Oh, that's really eye-opening. I'd just like to ask a final question as well. Do you think there's any possibility that one day, way into the future, all these files will be released and they'll finally get to the bottom of it?
The optimist in me says yes, but, you know, it's been covered up now. What are we going on, 60 years here that this stuff has been hidden? Much of the information, you know, that probably will come out is probably already been released. But there are steps that we can take to finally get all the information out to the public, and that is currently being worked on.
Oh, that's great to hear. Yeah, now, just a little bit of background information for our listeners. Steve is a writer, producer, and actor from Los Angeles. He's worked both behind and in front of the cameras in movies, television, commercials, and web shows. So obviously you're in the entertainment business, but what made you want to write this book and tell this story?
Yeah, I began my career in the state of Michigan. I'm currently in Los Angeles, California. I worked here in the film industry for about 12 years before I ever knew who Roger Craig was. In 2012, I had lost my father to what was said to have been a suicide at that time, but it was under very suspicious circumstances, put it that way. And so I began researching online and, you know, looking into suspicious suicides and things of that nature. And I found Roger Craig's information. I started looking into Roger's story, and I just felt a personal connection to what happened to him.
Right. Well, Steve, it's been a fascinating look into another side of the JFK assassination. And I know you have a feature film in the works titled The Deputy, which is all about this. So I'm sure this will only add to the ever-growing interest in this topic.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, The Deputy, we're in development on that. Yeah, that's something to look forward to.
Oh, that's great. Is there anywhere else that they can keep up with you or watch some of your work?
Absolutely. You know, I'm not the greatest promotion person, especially for my own work, but I do have a YouTube channel. There's a lot of free content on there for your listeners.
Yeah, I'll be sure to leave all of Steve's links in the show notes or the YouTube description. So just have a look there. Steve's books, The Deputy Interviews and The Patient is Dying, are available on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle. And if you want to learn more about Steve's investigation and updates on his projects, you can visit his website, stevecameronproductions.com. That just about wraps it up for me. Now remember, if you haven't yet listened to our original Sherlock Holmes podcast series featuring this crime or any other true crimes he tackles, then you can do so by visiting our Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. And don't forget to subscribe while you're there for future show updates. And thank you, Steve, for taking the time to be on our show.
Thank you, Alex.
And just before I sign off, I'd like to thank Drum Asia Studio for sponsoring this episode. They're an amazing studio and live music venue here in Hatamas, Kuala Lumpur, offering rental of their studios as well as a fully equipped performance stage and seating. Their space is extremely versatile and we've used it many times. To find out more, visit their website, drum-asia.com, to play, practice, perform, and party safe at Drum Asia Studio. We hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm your host, Alexandra Tan. I'll catch you next time.